Hey everyone, welcome back to the Australian Survivor Know-It-Alls. I'm your host, Nick Idanza, and I am giddy. I'm absolutely giddy with excitement to talk to my guest today. Not only is it because we had two of the best episodes of Survivor in a very long time, but my guest today is just an absolute star, an all-round awesome person, and to me, one of the reasons why last season was so good, and I want to bring in the great, the incomparable Tessa O'Halloran!
I should just leave now after that.
It's never going to get better than that.
That's the peak. I have peaked. Thank you, Nick. Thank you for having me. Tessa, and before we go any further, I feel like we should acknowledge for the RHAP fans that Nick has woken up at 6 a.m. on his Friday morning to do this podcast. So thank you, Nick.
Well, let's also acknowledge that you're up at like till 1 a.m. till whatever it is in London to try and make this work, because the time connections between Adelaide and London are horrific. So
They are.
We're both just super dedicated.
Yeah, and excited to talk about these episodes. There's a lot to chat through.
Tess, I am so excited to talk to you. I absolutely love everything you do, and like watching you last season and when we got the chance to chat and kind of digest all your game, like it was so insightful to kind of hear everything that you have to say about the game. I feel like there's very few people that play Survivor that I feel think about it the same way that I do, and you're one of them. So
No pressure.
Look, yeah, you did way better than I did, and I think that you could only bring good things to this podcast. So,
all right, let's go, shall we?
Well, like it's been a big week, so I want to dive all in, but I just feel like we need to do some on-air congratulations to you, Tessa, because you are getting married.
I am. My boyfriend's making a real woman out of me, Nick.
Is that a lot? Your life has definitely kind of changed since we last spoke at the end of last season. So congratulations. Yeah. I know the fans out there would be super happy for you. So well done.
Thank you. That's super nice. Thanks.
Anything else that you want to kind of touch on? Just your general vibe of the season before we get stuck in?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it has been a big season of ups and downs and like really a big tease in a lot of ways. Like there's something funny going on where I feel like they put in place these little teasers, like, you know, it comes to mind is the nacho thing when I thought Heath had seen the clue and they're kind of like rumpled up in the nachos and then it just drops away and nothing ever happens. Like I'm getting so excited about this season and then things just kind of drop off. But then like obviously all the delivery has been in the last couple of rounds. There's been a lot going on. So I'm actually just super excited about it though. Like I cannot wait until the next episode.
How do you feel watching the season after yours always kind of brings back lots of memories. Has that kind of been happening for you or have you just been able to kind of completely remove yourself?
Everyone always says that, but then like I got straight back into watching the US season when I came home. Like I actually caught up on the stuff I'd missed and I think it was Game Changers. So no. Maybe there's not that many similarities. That kind of helps.
You're just a normal person who isn't affected by the PTSD of Survivor.
Or I'm a really abnormal person that way too much enjoys games of lying and manipulation.
That's probably what it is. So, yeah.
Probably that one.
Let's dive in because we've got so much to get to. And, you know, people would know that I've been trying to do things in like chronological order so we just don't miss everything. But I just feel like this week we need to kind of throw out the rule book and we need to kind of dissect this by character. And I think that will be a really good way to do it. So if you would indulge me, I would like to kind of start with Benji, because Benji has been the breakout narrator, I believe, of Australian Survivor. You know, after being invisible for the first six episodes, he has been all over every episode since then, and this week was no exception. He pulled off, in my opinion, what was one of the coolest things I have seen in Survivor in recent memory, and this is what he got Shan to do with the idol. But I think we need to kind of go back a little bit further than that and talk about this kind of formation of the, you know, the Mighty Ducks Alliance. You know, now, Tessa, you were involved famously in one of the coolest alliance upsets in Australian Survivor, and this would be the Champagne Alliance, when a couple of you guys got together and were able to kind of flip the script and vote out Henry, I believe it was.
Oh, and then I was summarily taken out of the game also.
Yeah, so this is kind of what I wanted to talk about. There are quite a few interesting parallels, and I think it's perfect timing that you're here. So can you just talk to me a little bit about Benji and kind of like getting this plan together? Do you think he waited too long to get the five, and he should have tried to do something earlier, or do you think this was perfect timing for him?
I definitely don't think he waited too long. I think that in Australian Survivor, the longer you can hold your nerve before pulling the trigger, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely.
Because the worst thing to come out of this, it was an amazing move. What he did at Tribal Council was just cool. And like, it was cool that he even thought of it. And I think that's something that is that you cannot be undersold, the fact that sitting at Tribal Council, seeing his plans like crumble away in front of him, he thought to speak up and change it was incredible. But whether that was actually the best move, we totally sold. Like, we know that he goes out now as well.
Yeah.
I think that what would have made it really amazing is if he'd done that and then been able to keep Sean. Like, was there any way he could have kept Sean?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And, you know, I feel like we need to think about the idea that he was all over it, right? He was the one, I think, that was kind of like way more than Matt. He was the most connected in that moment to everyone. He had been cultivating this relationship with Sean. And, you know, I think one of the things I was talking with Shannon Gates about this is that he got greedy, I think. He had this amazing plan to dethrone this godfather, this person who is like
godfather.
Yeah. What I get, assassinate the godfather?
That was just so perfect for this season. I love all the mixed metaphors.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I would have fit right in. So he gets Matt, right? That seems like it's going to work, right? He's able to keep Grubby. They say that that's what they want. But then the trifecta, which Shani talks about that they're trying to go for, is to flush Sean's idol. And I just feel like, did he need to go that extra step? Because going that extra step is probably kind of like what made it, you know. Now he was able to course correct it in that moment, which was incredible. But I just feel like, is it that he went too far? Is there a way, like you said, that he could have either brought Sean in on the plan? It seems probably not likely because she was willing to play the idol on Matt. Like, could she have brought him in on the plan and brought, you know, made the idol part, you know, his idol as well? I don't know. What about this, Tess? What about this? What if he was to say, I've got an idol too, so come with us?
No, playing hers is not getting what they want anyway. They're going to lose somebody else.
Yeah. Thoughts?
I think he should have brought her in on it.
Yeah.
I think that at the end of the day, was Sean really ever going all the way with Matt? She was cultivating and protecting that relationship with Benji, which means that she was probably open to making a move with him at some point, particularly if that put her in a position where she was with people that she could more easily beat.
Yeah.
I think that Sean is someone who is looking out for her own game. And she's shown that she was cold when she voted out Sam.
Yes.
Like, she was so quick to push him back out to the outside.
Yeah.
And she's doing these things to advance herself in the game. And I think that Benji, with the relationship they had, could have talked her around to being a part of that move so that he had her for the next round.
Yeah.
And was it even that important that she didn't have an idol? I didn't really see what he was so worried about her doing with that idol in the short term.
Yeah. For sure. I guess if you're going to keep her out of the loop, then her having an idol is a bad idea. So you kind of almost have to go all the way. Otherwise, she's going to come back to get you next week. But you know you've got an idol as well. So, like, I feel like that was just kind of one step too far. And it really...
For Benji, knowing that he had the idol was probably the safety he needed to try and bring Sean in.
Yes.
Because he could tell her about the target and he could bring her in. And if that didn't work and she played the idol for Matt, then he has his to protect himself. And, you know, at worst, he loses one of his mighty ducks. None of whom meant that much to him at that point in the game.
Agreed.
And then the other thing is that the way he lost Sean was so public, and like it was a little on the like, I could see how you could feel humiliated
for
in that,
sure.
In
no,
that moment.
Yeah, I think that's the exact right word, because it's at tribal council. You've robbed someone of this moment. You know, you've been so openly manipulated. I think it was a necessity in that exact moment because she was about to destroy the plan. But
and he made her look. He made her look so uncertain. You know, she said, "I'm going to play it for me," like, and it was so out of character for her. And it was like he just made her look so vulnerable in front of everybody. How do you ever come back from that?
I think
he kind of anticipated doing that. Like, he obviously thought of it on the moment, which I still think was amazing. But I just think it would have been so much safer to bring her in on it. And because what was giving him a lot of power was having somebody, like, in both camps. If he keeps Sean on side at that next round, Sean's and Benji's names are not coming up unless one of them is really blindsiding the other.
Yes.
And it seems unlikely that they would bother doing that when they've both got other targets if they're on each other's side.
Yeah. I think you also hit on something really good there about the idea of humiliating someone. Like, you know, it's very, you know, everyone is conditioned to know that, you know, it's a game, you know, good, you know, respect the game, you know, shake hands and all that kind of stuff. And that's pretty, it's not easy to do, but it's easier to do than to come back from humiliation. And I definitely learned that in my season. I was inadvertently humiliated people. People have humiliated me. And that's a really tough bridge to bond. And I think that there's just after that night, there was no chance of them working together again. So, which is a shame because those two are super smart. And I was actually really enjoying their like clandestine, like, you know, running off into the bush to chatting. I thought that was really cool. Yeah, really cool.
And I'm so sad to see that relationship come to its end.
Yeah.
I felt like, especially in the super like late game, it would have been so interesting to see what these two did. But they were never going to final two together.
No.
Surely.
No.
But I would love to see it. I would love to see them argue it out against each other, like a, you know, like a Wendell and Dom, like to see two really quite aggressive and intelligent players go up against each other would have been great.
For sure.
And I wonder if in Australian Survivor, if you are a player that is seen as strategic or that is seen as a big threat, maybe that's how you get to the end. Maybe it is you team up with somebody else like that, because otherwise it's so hard to see it happening now.
It is really hard. Like, you know, we'll talk a little bit about I wanted to get your thoughts on like placing this season in amongst the spectrum of what we've seen so far in Survivor. But it does seem that like the bigger targets kind of go around, you know, they don't make it past this time in the game. The people who are the strategic, physical and social threats, you know, I think of yourself and that terrible week where we lost, you know, you, Sarah and Luke, which, you know, we're all still mourning about. You know, it's tricky to kind of get past this hump in the game.
Yeah. It really is. And I mean, you know, Sarah tried to do it in our season to say, look, we need to start sticking together because otherwise there's going to be none of us left.
Yeah.
And it's a really difficult argument to make, but people like Benji and Sean have that relationship where you would think, I think maybe what's missing there though, is that this is just not a season of people who have watched the game, which is an advantage in so many ways, but also it means that they haven't, I think, thought a lot about the way that the last couple of Australian seasons have played out.
Yeah.
Which I know you want to talk about this later. Am I like way jumping the gun?
No, go for it. Yeah.
Well, just at the end of in fact, in Jury Villa, I think I was talking to Henry about this and we were saying like the 55-day game, it's really difficult, you know, to play a big game and get to the end. But I was being super optimistic and saying, yeah, but now it's become a threat to be under the radar.
Yeah.
Like if that's me going out there for season three, I'm thinking you've got to get rid of these under the radar players early in the merge because they're going to the end. Like everyone wants to take them with you, but then they're going to outnumber you and they're going to the end. It becomes super threatening to be under the radar. And I was so interested to see how people would handle that and how the bigger players would try to get through in a way that they could still argue over the other bigger players. I thought it was going to be really cool. But because we haven't got people who have been really watching closely, I think that you didn't get that like turnaround post the last couple of seasons.
For sure. For sure. And it's, you know, it's such a shame. You watch the American Survivor and, you know, there's always going to be one or two people that make it to the finale that you're like, you know, that whether it's through editing or whatever, that you really do feel like are the kind of like strategic thrust of the show.
Or you could see their narrative of how they made themselves get there.
Definitely.
Yeah. Whereas we might get someone who's had six confessionals.
Which we are. My winner pick, Monica, my preseason winner pick.
Going strong.
I want to just talk about, you know, why did Sian play the idol for Matt? This is what I am like still really unclear about. Like, I think on one hand, there's the argument that like you want to just get rid of it. You found it in like a super public way, again, a somewhat humiliating way, and you don't want that on you. And she just wanted to get rid of it. So, do you have any other thoughts as to why she played it for Matt?
We didn't even talk about her pooping out her idol.
Oh, my God.
That was so bad. And then she tried to hug Matt and Matt, like, ignored her, and so she had to hug Fenella.
Oh, did you see that? So I saw that. It was the cringiest.
I just felt – and it was so awkward. I'm not sure if they, like, didn't know if it was being recorded or what. Everyone just stood there, like, super awkward. Anyway.
No, that was amazing. That was, like – that, to me, is one of the – when I think back on this season, that'll be one of the – the top five moments that just stuck in my mind forever.
It's actually kind of amazing that you don't see that happen more often. Like, I guess it fell out of Rowan's pants too, didn't it?
Yes, that's what I was so worried about, you know, having a poop idol.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So I have a little bit of a spoiler because I actually listened to one of Benji's exit interviews on the tube this morning.
Is it a spoiler or inside info?
Well, no, like I listened to his exit interview, so it's out there. It's research, us. Nick.
Good, because I just know how much the listeners hate spoilers. So thank you. Please tell us.
Okay. Benji, if you're out there, I hope I'm telling this story correctly because I was on the tube. But from what I understand, he did tell Sian that they were voting Matt. And that's – so Sian playing her idol for Matt was her making a choice to stick with her Champions Alliance.
Right.
And that's why Benji was like, well, got no choice then.
Yeah.
Because she had, you know, they had discussed it. He had told her the plan and she still went to protect Matt.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
That's I think, what I understood. So, I mean, is that a good move then? So then to me, I go back to the thing of if I was Sian, as much as I said Benji should involve Sian, and I'm not sure how much he did because we didn't see it, but I was thinking it was probably that conversation where when they're at the water well, you know, and then Matt comes up and they're a bit sheepish and they're like, "We're Brian, right? We were just talking about Brian."
Awkward, yeah.
So I wondered, and I would love to hear Benji confirm if that was – if that was when he had told Sian about it.
And in that
case, I'm going to turn my blame back around on Sian for not then embracing the plan to get rid of Matt.
For sure. Yeah. No, really good point. I think that if she knows that's where it's going and she trusts that, because obviously she did, because Benji had also said that they're coming for you. So she must have known that was a lie, because otherwise she wouldn't have put the idol on Matt, because it would have blown back on her. So she must have known that was a lie. And if she was that confident where the votes were going, cut bait, lose Matt. You know, he's not going to be upset with you for not saving him with an idol. You've still got the idol.
She doesn't have to do anything. Yeah. Just literally do nothing.
Yeah. Hold on to the idol. You've got it for next week. Benji clearly, you know, trusts you. And if you think he's going to come for you next week, or maybe even you could draw the votes to next week, you play your idol or something like that. So I feel like the paranoia would have been working against them. But yeah, there was definitely maybe something that they all could have done. But the biggest person who I blame in all this is Matt.
Yeah, why didn't he play his idol? Crazy.
I tweeted about this and I have yet to figure out what the hell he was thinking. I've watched Jury Villa. I heard him on The Project, I think it was, and he was talking about how he didn't even know he had it in his pocket or something like that. Like, he'd forgot it was in his bag.
I think, it had to have just been a moment of like that, you know, ringing in your ears, can't think what's going on. And I think the thing that Benji did that helped that along is that he said things that didn't make sense to anybody. Mm. When he was like, there's going to be a revote, the votes are split or whatever, he said, I can see how you'd be doing the numbers in your head and be like, what is he talking about? Like, this makes no sense. And then just, you know, and then you just play your idol because it makes no sense. Yeah. And you're at final 8, final 9. So,
well, other than playing the idol, like, you know, she stood up, she's playing it on you. You had no idea that she was going to play it on you. So clearly she has intel that you don't. So I'm saying if you're Matt, then Benji says what he says and changes her mind. That's where you have to say something. Like, that's where you have to say, like, Sean, I have no idea what he's talking about. Like, you can play it on whoever you want, but we're not coming for you. Myself, Steve, Shane, you know, we're all with you. Like, this is complete baloney. Do not be suckered in by him. And I think in that moment that you could kind of appeal to the fact that, like, you're getting played, Sean. Like, you're smarter than this. He's not, we're not splitting the vote on you. So, but he just sat there in stony silence. And I think that kind of said more to her than what Benji was saying.
But then, and how about, like, Steve was staring at Matt the entire time. And then when he wanders out of tribal council, he's like, Sean, he had an idol. But so why didn't he say anything? Like,
oh my.
I just felt like they all watched this, like, slow motion car. So weird. I can understand, like, I do get that it's a confusing situation, and I think that Matt had been in control through so much of the game and just had everything go his way because he was masterful at what he was doing, that I guess he just got comfortable. I mean,
yep.
And that's death in this game, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, he got, I think that he got cocky, which, you know, everyone gets at some, well, not everyone, but, you know, most people get at some point in their game, especially when you've had such a level of control for 39 days as he has. But I feel like that there was definitely things, obviously there was things he could have done with the idol, but even without the idol. And like, Steve was sitting next to him. Even if you don't want to say it to draw attention, just poke him. Whisper in his ear. Like, and I think that's also part of people who don't watch enough Survivor know that you can do, you can break those rules. Like, Benji knew that he could transgress the rules by kind of saying, no, don't do it. Because I've had casual people at my work, like casual fans, who say, are you allowed to do that? Like, are you allowed? It's like, you can do whatever you want if it's going to make good TV. Like,
yeah.
And Steve probably wouldn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It just feels like, and I mean, the clues that Jonathan was giving him as well, that he was asking him about Russell going home with the
Army. Yeah.
He asked him, oh my gosh, he asked him at one point, what makes you the next target for the Alliance, Matt? Who said he was even a target?
Yeah, exactly.
Although, you know how I said I didn't have any flashbacks? Actually,
I remember
in the tribal council where I was voted out.
Don't make me relive it.
Jonathan asked me twice, why might I be a target? And I was like, I don't know, I'm delightful. And I think we moved on.
I'm a ray of sunshine. Idiot. I'm definitely not.
What an idiot. So again, like, I get it. I get that you're tired and it's been a long game and you get a bit too comfortable, but there were so many alarm bells going off.
So with that, like, you know, we've got, there's a couple of things just more in this tribal council that I want to talk about because it was so much to discuss. Sean is manipulated by Benji in that moment. And then a lot of people on Twitter, you know, I logged into Twitter after I'd seen the episode on the, you know, in my time zone, and everyone's kind of like, oh my God, Sean, like, how did you not realize? You know, a lot of people were talking about Sean, you know, they don't have the numbers to split the votes, you know, but I don't think that she was sitting there going, okay, so it must have been Shane that flipped on. I don't think you can't sit there and run those numbers in that moment. You're standing up in tribal council with an idol. Jonathan's got his hand out. People are talking to you. You don't know which way's up. You have to be able to forgive her for not running those moments, that running those numbers in the moment.
And also for falling onto the safer thing for her.
For sure.
I mean, if you're going to do anything last minute, with your idol, it better be played on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing I would say is that she made a big mistake in sounding so unsure. She could have just had that minute to think when Benji was doing his thing. And even if she came to that decision, just say, you know what? Can't take this risk. There's something going on I don't understand. I'm playing it on myself.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
It wouldn't have seemed wishy-washy because he just can't afford that in front of the jury.
Yeah, like, you know, playing an idol is a moment of power. Like, you have to own it. Like, it's a moment of power. And she definitely didn't. Yeah. It just seems to me that, like, she either had Benji or she didn't, right? So if you don't, if she didn't have Benji, then why are you believing him about the split? But if you did have Benji, then I just felt like there was just so many like missed synapses that weren't firing. But again, I don't blame her for that. I think if I'm reading it correctly, that when she's trusted Benji, she's cultivated this relationship, she's heard from him that they are kind of throwing her name out there, which she would definitely be feeling after the pooping of the idol thing. And that in that moment, she probably thought, do you know what? Something's happening here. Everyone is working against me, as in Fenella and Shawnee have gotten together with Matt and Shane and everyone, and they are going to split the votes on myself and Brian. You know, she just saw at the previous reward that Matt brings Fenella in as this kind of foot soldier. Mm. So I think there is, you know, plausible thought that her and Benji were the only two people out of the entire move that would kind of make her think that. I don't know. I think that's maybe... I'm trying to defend her. I don't know.
No, I completely understand her playing it on herself.
Yeah.
I think that she probably just could have played it better for the jury.
Yeah, for sure. And she would have a lot of regrets, you know, obviously about how that went down. But the one thing that she shouldn't regret is she doesn't have to save Matt. She shouldn't feel bad about saving Matt. He had an idol. He didn't save himself. He didn't do anything to fight for it. So she went. I'm so glad that they showed Steve telling her that he had the idol, because that should have made her go, oh, okay, great. Well, then I'm fine.
I mean, and she recovered well as well.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, her sort of dusting herself off and going and talking to everyone, I think maybe her Brian management could have been smoother. But otherwise, I felt like she... For somebody who would, I'm sure she would have been so shaken by that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Shine gets shaken because she's a barrister and she seems amazing and like very confident of herself. But if that were me, I can just imagine walking out of that tribal and feeling like you've, you know, you would feel like you'd been made a fool of.
Yeah.
I don't think she had been, but I think that's how you'd feel.
Yeah.
And so to go back into camp and be composed and be like, good move, guys, that was a good move. You should have brought me in on it, which is what she did. Yeah, like she said, I would have been happy to go along with that, was like great composure from her.
For sure. I want to talk just a little bit about Matt and kind of just eulogize him before we move on to the next episode's kind of big stories. But, you know, Matt was this, you know, archetypal alpha male character. You know, he had mateship written all over him, but I think he did. I think he did way better than what people were expecting in terms of like his willingness to play the game.
He completely,
definitely had moments of sanctimony, but I think that he was actually a really, really good player. So, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I know what you mean about the moments of sanctimony, but I feel like he was using that in a way that I hadn't seen other players of his archetype use it. Like, I felt like he used it to keep people in line, but then he went right on ahead and like chopped heads. Like, he did what had to be done and he was doing it to advance himself in the game. I don't feel like he was under any illusion that he was going to not tell lies. Like, I felt like he was owning his game for somebody who was clearly sort of learning it as he went along. And I feel like his social game and his treatment of people around him was pretty exceptional.
Definitely. I think his social game was probably the underreported part of this all. You know, we look at him and go, oh, he's this physical force. And, you know, he was the godfather, so he's a strategic force. But I actually think the social thing is what has held him together the most. The sanctimony maybe came just in some of his confessionals, as I mentioned last week in the podcast, that he should be kind of being completely honest with us. And as opposed to saying, you know, oh, what is Sam doing, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, enough of that. But I think that he was, you know, he was definitely a super strong player.
In defense of Matt, I think when he was saying, what is Sam doing? I don't get what, why would he do that? I think he's saying more like, that was a bad game move for Sam.
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoyed watching Matt, and I'm dumbfounded that he is not going further. I thought that we were getting the, if not the winner edit, we were getting the, you know, final four or five, you know, or final three gets clipped at the end. And I would be 100% down on it for a Matt return. Like, I would watch that in a heartbeat. And I can't say that much about many of the kind of alpha male archetypes. So well done, Matt. Well done, Matt. I'm like very impressed with your gameplay. Yeah.
I am a Matt fan. I am so signed up. I would love to watch him play again. And I think if he played again, he'd be playing with like a whole new bag of tricks.
Yes.
He knows how the game's played now. And he's someone who, he was smart about it and he adapted and things like, I think about watching him turn Shane Gould to their side as if, you know, his way of involving people and bringing them into a plan is such a knack that I know I definitely do not have that. And it, I just, I can see how people followed him and I would love to see him play again.
Do you think the secret's out though on him? Do you think he did play up the whole like, oh, I'm just this kind of like, you know, football guy who doesn't really know what he's doing. I'm here doing it for my kids. And that kind of was part of his disarming charm that he was seemingly didn't know what he was talking about, but now everyone knows?
I think that in any Australian cast, he would find enough people to have twirled around his finger.
How do we bottle this, Tessa? Tell me. You and I think we need to bottle this kind of stuff. Like, it's just...
Absolutely. For me to get people to do what I want, I have to, like, actually physically twist their arm. That just, like, raises an eyebrow and suggests that that might be a good idea, and people were all on board. It's such a skill. I'm so, so impressed. I'm really sad he's gone from the game.
At least it works when you actually physically twist their arm. I would physically try to twist their arm and they'd turn around and punch me in the face. So like,
people just don't know what's hit them, Nick, because I'm down so low. They're like, why is my arm doing this? Ah! And they're all like just taken by surprise.
Oh, that's great. Where do you think, though, you know, Matt's game went wrong? Because I've got some thoughts on this, but, you know, I just feel like there was some key deficiencies. What do you think?
I think one of the flaws of Matt's game was that he always tried to get as many people into his plan as possible rather than establishing a really clear in and out. Like, I didn't quite understand why he was really bringing Benji in.
Mm-hmm.
Why did he ever give Benji any trust?
Yeah.
Or expect any trust back? You know, if I were Matt... and I had this group of loyal followers and the ability to keep someone like a Brian in, which he had.
Yeah.
You know, if he hadn't turned on Brian, he would have had, you know, Brian said it. He's like, oh, I'm just going to stick with the champion.
Yeah.
There's no need for him to have Benji. But I think Matt got a little bit greedy with his votes and sort of wanted to have as many people on board as possible.
Yep.
So I think that really, like, using his skill and firmly making a group of people in and just going out there and pagonging is what Matt would have been great at.
Tessa, I wrote the exact same thing down in my notes. Like, the pagonging is the way to go for Matt. Now, it's boring. Yeah. It's boring to watch.
Yeah.
And we would have all hated it. But he began eating his own way too quickly, I think.
Yeah.
The Lydia thing, you can kind of say, all right, no worries. It was Shane's plan. And, you know, she's such a physical force that we can kind of, and you've been away from her for 15 days or whatever it was. Sure.
And she had that Robbie relationship that was going to be problematic.
Yeah, I can understand that one. And it's before the jury, right? But the Sam thing is, it was ridiculous. It was just this minor transgression, apparently. This minor transgression of him talking to someone who's not in the game anymore, who it worked out, you got her, it was shaky reasoning for you to do it in the first place, and you were already kind of destroying the alliance. Like, he wasn't really doing anything that bad. So
that was so weird.
That was super weird. I think.
I think something else was going on there.
I hope there was something else going on there because it was really weird. I just feel like, you know, that, you know, the he shouldn't have been targeting Brian the night that he went home. Like, there are still still contenders in the mix that need to go. You are at the top of the pyramid, right? Matt was undoubtedly the top of the pyramid. He has a number two who is never going to break from him in Steve. And then he's got these other people like Sean and Shane who are kind of doing, you know, who might try and topple him, but probably not yet, right?
I thought it was Sean. I thought it was Sean that would get him.
For sure. That's what I thought as well. So I just feel like when you're at the top, the last thing you want is instability. The people who need that instability are your Bryans, your Monicas, maybe even your Shanes as well. Those people are the people who should be kind of working against the pogonging. When you're at the top, the last thing you want is to do the pogonging, and it's very rare that it'll actually work.
Yeah, especially when you're so firmly at the top like Matt was.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think that the group, your group that is going to take out the minority is unstable, or you think you're at the bottom of that, then I can understand. I mean, that's where I live, so I can understand wanting to make moves. But for Matt, I mean, if he got to the end, surely he was winning.
Yes.
Like, I don't think he was Lee Castle dining it. I think he would have been eloquent at the end. I think that he'd controlled the game so clearly that he would have won it.
Yeah.
So what was the incentive for him to be picking off people who were in his alliance and then making his bottom people worried?
And there's just such clear targets. Like Shawnee and Fenella, to me, are such clear targets for him, as obviously Benji. But, you know, someone like Shawnee and Fenella, like, that is a two that you can't break. And you've admitted that they love Brian and Brian loves them. So instead of targeting Brian, target them. It does everything at one time, like getting rid of those. Yeah. You know that Brian, it seems like Brian does not get along with Steve and Shane. You know those two factions are never working together to topple you. He needed to pogong this thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to shift and talk about Bronica, or Brian and Monica, for those not in the know.
That one.
So Brian and Monica deserve, I think, you know, we're 37 minutes into this podcast and we haven't really kind of spoken about their role in all this, but they were...
Well, we're doing better than Survivor. Like, proportionally, we're still not even up to mentioning Monica.
Okay, that's actually a good point. Okay, well, then we're tracking well then. Yeah. So I think that, you know, it can't be underestimated how well they played this week. In a super crazy week, they voted correctly twice. They were the swing votes twice. They did the best thing for them twice. He's got an idol. She's not even in the mix in terms of looking like a threat. She's voted correctly at every tribal council except the one with Russell, and she voted for him on the revote. And I just – and Brian, I think, has voted every tribal council correctly except for the Jackie one. I'm not quite sure. This is Shannon's stats that I'm stealing here. But I just feel like they played it beautifully.
Yeah, they're clearly the big winners out of this round. And, I mean, I feel bad now that I said we shouldn't mention Monica yet. Because Monica was somehow in a position this week where everyone was convinced that they had her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she must be doing something in the background that is making these people so confident in her.
Yeah, I get mad Christie vibes from Monica. Like, I really do. Like, I've said this when she had her hair in the plaits and she looked like her. But, like, I genuinely think that she's – that kind of that same that everyone thinks is easy pickings, but isn't, but is totally not. Like, actually, like, you know, Christie, you know, required so much management from so many people, and she was quite stubborn when she wanted to be. And I think that, you know, whether that's Monica or not, Monica's game is kind of predicated on the fact that everyone thinks that they can just swoop her in, and she only swoops in and out when she knows it's good for her.
Yeah, yeah, she's read every situation correctly, hasn't she? Which I guess is because she's getting so much information from different people.
Yes.
And then she does this funny thing as well, where, like, at the reward, the chicken reward, Sian was saying, like, are you guys in? What do you think of this plan? And there was just, like, silence. And then she was like, Monica, are you in? Monica was like, huh? Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm totally in.
Yeah.
And then she did the exact same thing on the beach with Benji. She was like, oh, what? Yeah, I'm totally in.
Of course,
To me, sounds like totally disingenuous.
Mm.
But everyone completely eats it up.
Yeah. She said to Matt, he goes, I hope you're a good actor. And she's like, yeah. And it's like, because I'm acting to you right now. Like,
yeah. I liked that. I don't know. I would just love to know. I mean, it's so hard to predict what's going to happen now because Monica and Brian are huge now in deciding what happens. We have no idea where Monica's head's at.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And she has been so underserved in the edit, like six confessionals, whatever it is, that's just way less than anyone so far in Australia's Survivor history, as far as I can tell.
Not even just confessionals. Like, we don't even see her in conversation very often.
For sure. Which is a shame because clearly she's doing something right other than just belly flopping. But she got redemption for that, and that's, like, so symbolic. That's, like, you know, like Teacher Nick putting his hat on. Like, this is the metaphor of her kind of, like, finally getting the recognition that she deserves, that she's able to kind of, like, cast off the shackles of her previous episodes and emerge as this actual force who can learn to pin drop properly.
I don't know. At the time when she belly flopped, they gave her hero music. And I was like, is that what we do? I feel like that was a Dodo music situation.
Yeah, I know. But, like, are we going to begrudge her that, like, the one segment she's had? Like, you know, you give her all the hero music you get.
She was a graceful belly flopper. I'll give her that. So interesting thing.
The other thing is, you know, we've had two people voted out with idols in their pockets, which is, again, Shannon tells me, the first time since Micronesia with Aussie and Jason. No, in back-to-back, sorry.
Oh, okay.
With Aussie and Jason back-to-back going out with idols in their pocket. And, like, you know, the
Micronesia's favorite.
The Black Widow Brigade is considered one of the best alliances in, you know, Survivor history. Now, nobody that, you know, Brian and Monica didn't know that they were voting people out with idols in their pocket, but that's why the blind side, that's why you have to go the blind side just in case that does happen. Mm. So I feel like we need to give them quite a lot of credit. What did you think of Brian in this episode in terms of his, it seems like he's the one making the decisions. Well, that's what the show's telling us for the two. But what did you think about him deciding to flip back and vote out Benji in the second episode?
It's been, I mean, I think over the whole two episodes, it's been great to see the emergence of Brian because, I mean, up until this point, we've known nothing about where he sits in the game. Like, we saw him wander out into the ocean, you know, pensive.
Mm-hmm. Brian music. Time.
We saw the bowling ball and that is it. But then the last couple of episodes, we've seen this, like, arc where he was deliberately bringing in the girls and describing that part of his game and then actually, like, using that relationship to move with them on the map vote, which made him look clearly like the most powerful person in that group because I felt like he was more in with the girls than Benji was.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second episode, I didn't feel like we actually got to see enough of his thought process before he changed to Benji to see why he'd done it, but he was clearly the one who made that happen.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was almost more interested in Monica in the second episode because she was the one that Benji spoke to about the extra votes. And so how much of that came from her in terms of what was going to happen on the re-vote, it's just really unclear. They never showed us, did they?
And you're right in the fact that they didn't show Brian kind of, like, you know, much of his kind of umming and ahhing. It was more about, like, Benji and Sian saying, is this going to happen with them? And I think that speaks to the fact that I think Brian was resolute once he decided whether it was at the challenge or not, or whether it was because he had the idol in his pocket or because he'd won immunity. I think that he wasn't umming and ahhing. I think he was resolute, because if you actually look at when he votes in the voting confessional, he's like, sorry, yeah, you've just lied to too many people. Like, I don't think he had that much of a strong attachment to Benji. Like, it really was just one vote that they came together. And, yeah, I think that there was just too many signs pointing to him that Benji couldn't be trusted. Not least of all, which was the thing about lying when he was wearing the necklace.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that.
Oh, my God.
That was painful.
That was emblematic of Benji's gameplay, which is like, he knows that he can lie and it's worked for him, and it's just doing too much. It's just that extra 10% which he has to rein in and not kind of go all out there. It's kind of like the getting greedy with the Shan idol. It's kind of like, you know, lying about the, you know, she's coming for you. It's like, and like, what was so good about that is that people never wear their necklace around camp. Well, I never did because I never had one, but you've had one. Did you ever wear it around camp?
It would have fallen off my shoulders. It was too big. Wow. And Shawnee's reaction then was really good. I just remembered she tried to turn it around. She was like, no, but the next vote.
In the future.
Ryan was just like, what the hell? Walked off. Yeah, maybe that was when, because I was trying to think back when you were saying that Brian was really resolute. And I was thinking that at the chicken reward with Shan, he was really not committing to her. Yeah. I don't think he'd made up his mind then. And it wasn't like he tried to use that situation, like he'd already made up his mind to target Benji and then use that situation to bring Shan closer, you know, to firm up that vote. So I don't think he'd made up his mind then.
I think it was finding winning immunity and having the idol in his pocket. That can really make you super bold, having those kind of tools in your chest. And I think from that point, he was just like, no, we've got to do this. It would be love to have seen a conversation between him and Monica. Like, we always lump them together, but we never actually see them talking.
In fact, it's quite hard to imagine their relationship because I don't think we've ever seen them talk to each other. It's like the Bechamel test or whatever it is. I always forget what it's called for feminism in media, except that we never see Brian and Monica talk to each other.
What is this test? This is cool.
Oh, now I've forgotten what it's called. That's embarrassing. It's like the Bechamel test.
Is it Bechamel like a sauce?
Yeah, that's why I always think it's Bechamel. It's, you know, see two women talking to each other about something other than men in the media or on a television show or a movie, whatever, to pass the stupid Bechamel test. It's not Bechamel, but that's all I can think of.
No, Bechdel. I've just Googled.
Bechdel. Did you just Google that?
Yeah, yeah. The Bechdel test is a method for evaluating the portrayal of women in fiction. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Bechamel, however, if I search Bechamel.
But don't look for the Bechamel test. I actually really don't like Bechamel. Anyway, that's what I'm thinking.
Bechamel sauce, also known as white sauce, is made from white roe and milk.
It's awful, yeah. It's that stuff that's on Hollandaise, like Hollandaise eggs. Horrible. This is a real tangent, Nick. I'm really sorry that I took it down this far.
Amazing, amazing. Now I feel like French toast or whatever it is. Eggs Benedict, yeah.
Okay, anyway. We don't get to see them talking to each other. They're not validated as characters because we don't get to see them talk to each other. Their opinions only matter when they're talking to one of the other characters.
It's a good analogy, just the wrong name. I like it. So let's did you think that it was obvious that Benji was going home?
No.
What did you think was going to happen?
I thought when I was watching the episode that Shan was going.
Okay.
Because I felt like Monica, especially with her whole like long pause, I'm totally with you thing at the reward, was just not with Shan. And I thought that because they had all voted Brian the week before, there was no way Brian was going back to the champs.
Yeah. I think that the only thing that could have saved Benji was
an idol. Sorry, go on.
What I thought was going to happen was that everyone was just going to go, this is too hard to predict. Let's all turn on Grubby. Like, that's what I thought was probably going to happen. But then he won the immunity and that kind of changed things, which I like, because whether that was true or not, in my mind, it kind of like had to shift the plans. But I think that what was interesting was how Shawnee played the advantage. And we'll get to that in a second, but like, I feel like that was an indication to me that Benji was going home, because we weren't getting it in a way that it was going to kind of flip the game. We were getting it in the way that to me, it was edited in a way that was like, this is problematic, because they would say that like, oh, I have the power to add two votes, and it looked like people were buying it and it didn't. So I never felt like it was being built up to be this saving grace. It looked like it was being built up to be a source of confusion. And I kind of,
yeah, especially when Benji was like, it gets me two or three or four votes.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, very confusing.
Yeah, and I kind of like, there was a couple of little editing choices that I thought were weird. You know, we get this confessional of Sean on the beach crying, saying, I'm never going to see this beach again. And that's what someone says when they know they're going home. But you never see that. You never, ever, ever see that on Survivor. Like, I can't think of, and if, listeners, if you can think of an example, let me know when that person has actually gone home that night.
Yeah.
Other than maybe like the Stephanie Johnson boot in Ghost Island or something like that. But it just seems way too obvious that like she wasn't going home. And that's when I thought it was definitely flipping back on Benji.
Yeah. I didn't pick up on that. I just thought we were watching like a
slow death.
I actually kind of thought it might have been a villainizing of Benji, so that when he didn't win, because I didn't think he was going to win, I didn't think that they wanted us to really like him.
Gotcha. That's a good point.
Which kind of fit with the early edit out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I want to talk about this advantage that Shawnee and Fenella had, because, you know, everyone loves Shawnee and Fenella. Have you been vibing what they've been bringing to the show? Yeah,
I completely love Shawnee. I would like to hear more of what they're thinking about where they're going to go in the game. They have said before that their strategy is that they don't have a strategy. So it's possible that they are really just winging it and, you know, slipping through the cracks and giggling, which I love watching, but I would like to hear a bit of a plan from them.
Yes, I agree. And I think that they are fantastic TV characters, TV characters. But what would be great is if you watch them on a second go, that they would be the TV character still, but they would also have maybe a little more understanding of how they can work this. And I think the indicator to me was the vote steal, that they stole Sean's vote.
Yeah, yeah.
That is not the move in that situation. You're spooking someone with an idol.
And when they are so lucky to have Steve there, although you could easily forget, but they are lucky to have Steve there because he's a legitimate, like, he could be their target. He's still, at least in theory, an immunity threat. So they could easily vote steal Steve, and it doesn't matter they stole his vote because he's never with them. He's clearly not with them. Like, they're not going to lose his loyalty down the track. He could be the target, so that's going to confuse whoever's potentially playing an idol. And he's voting the right way for them to take his vote away.
Yes.
So it's like a clear or it's still Steve.
Yeah, and I feel like in the wash-up, that's something that they would realise afterwards. Now, would it have made that much of a difference? I don't think so.
We'd be going to a re-vote, though, wouldn't we? We'd be discussing re-voting or rocks.
So they steal his vote, and then they still have they would have four votes plus...
They tie again.
They'd tie, and then on the re-vote, they would be able to... So it would have changed things.
Yeah, it could have gone to rocks.
Yeah, right. And I feel like they would have gone to rocks. Do you? I feel like that's like the kind of like flippant attitude that I think you need to go to Rocks. And I think that they could have done it. Wow. I didn't realize that they actually could have made it happen with that supposed to.
Because it's everyone except Benji and Sean, who are the two people I think would not go to Rocks.
Yeah, and it's good if, like, Steve and Shane and that aren't willing to go to Rocks. No, they would. Well, hold on. Wait, I think we're missing Brian and Monica. No, the ship had already sailed, hadn't it? Because Brian, Monica, Sean, Steve, and Shane. No, it would have been 5 versus 3, 4.
No, because they stole Steve. They took Steve's vote.
Brian,
so they take
Monica,
his vote again on the
Brian,
on
Monica,
the
reboot. Sean. Oh, 3-3. Yeah. Okay. No, you're right. Wow. So they could have made they could have made it happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to add to the crazy week, chuck a rock drawer on top.
Please let the next person who gets a vote still be listening right now.
And that's the problem with the vote still is that, like, you know, people have said it's so situational. You have to know, like, there is a very specific set of circumstances which need to occur for the vote still to actually work. And I think that, yeah, we've just kind of stumbled on accidentally they would have stumbled onto a way to make it work. Even though if it wasn't the original intention. So my thought was to
be drama.
My thought was to play it for Steve, but I didn't realize that it would actually have that much benefit and go to Rock. So wow. Yes, this is great.
I don't entirely like I thought about this vote steal thing that I mean obviously it's cursed. But besides that
Australian Ghost Island.
It's basically the ability to like magically turn somebody to do what you want them to do.
Yes.
Without them knowing they're doing it.
Yeah.
Which sounds amazing. So then why does it always end up being so useless?
I think it's because, like, you know, the power of one vote, like, you know, yes, it works, but again, so specific. The reason why alliances are king in this game is because it's a you have to get people, you have to get a group of people to move over. And I think that it should work more often, but no, it's very interesting that it doesn't. Like, I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but like throughout all of Survivor history, like how often does it actually pan out? Like it didn't.
I'm going to say never.
Didn't pan out for Steven.
Yeah.
Well, in my experience in season one, it did pan out for Lee. Lee had a vote still, and he stole Sam's vote. But it was inconsequential. He was going home regardless. It was just kind of like.
Yeah, I'm going to count inconsequential as being a misplay.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, I guess it never really has a chance to kind of like completely upend the.
But then how often are votes like 5-4 or, you know, a split vote that just gets you over by one vote? It feels like quite often it's a margin of one vote, which the vote steal should.
Yeah.
Address, but I guess then you need to be in the minority of that. I don't know. I'm confusing myself with situations that don't exist.
Well, this is why I really liked Benji's lie. Like he like you said before, it was wishy-washy, he used this thing and it gave it extra power, which it didn't have.
Yeah.
It didn't work in the end. And it may have turned off Brian and Monica even more, but I feel like it was a really clever gameplay because he was able to kind of, you know, scare people. It's just like sometimes just the specter of something is enough to make happen. It's like it's the equivalent of Rupert putting a rock in his pocket in Heroes Villains and people thinking, oh, that's he's got an idol. He's not going home. Or Tony saying that I can play this up to the final four, you know, the Tyler Perry idol. So I really love when people do that. And I think you couple that with the fact that he, you know, came up with that moment when Sean was playing the idol. And although Benji went home, I think he had an excellent week. He had a really good week. A lot wrong, but a lot right.
And he was a really creative player as well. Like, I can't credit him enough for the fact that he was always thinking of ways that he could twist a situation. And, like, yeah, he probably overplayed that at times. But better to be trying to think of new ways to play a situation and trying to think of new ideas than just floating through.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, in the beginning on Contenders Beach, he could have been doing more to make sure. I feel like there was some really poor management of Paige. I think that he didn't need to kind of, it was super preemptive to, I think he just got itchy feet with Tegan. So I feel like he has the...
Would you have sent or saved?
In that moment, I feel like it wouldn't matter for them. Like, I feel that, I've said this on the podcast that for Benji and Robbie, either way, this was never going to work. So in that moment, I would have saved Tegan for sure, but I just feel like either way, you're screwed because of what they did beforehand to Paige, to Heath, to Tegan beforehand. It was too late. What would you have done?
I would have definitely kept her around just as another option.
Yeah.
I think it would have been so easy to defend doing that with that crowd. Like, to say to Lydia or to Matt, like, oh, you know, as a person, as a human being, I just couldn't end her game there, blah, 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 blah. Like, it wouldn't have been hard to get away with that.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and still maintain, if you wanted to, the option of sticking with Lydia and Sean, or you've got the option then of going with the other contenders if something happens. I just think it's options. Or it's another round for you. Yeah. You know, it's, yeah.
I want to talk about Shane because I love Shane. I have been been buying what she's been selling every week. What are your thoughts on Shane?
Yeah, I love Shane. Mm. I loved that bench warmer moment when they were it was just so perfect that there was this like battle going on in the polls. Sorry, I'm going back a couple of weeks. But the immunity that Sean won on the poll against Lydia when Lydia went, I just loved that they were like battling it out on the polls. Mm. And meanwhile, Shane's just, what did she say? I'm inclined.
Yeah, I'm inclined for a blind side.
I just loved that. And I loved how, like, I almost would say that Shane is a little bit more inclined to sanctimony than Matt was. I think that she does a lot of...
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I think she's quite judgy of people for playing the game, but not in a sinister way.
Yeah.
I think
that's interesting. See, I didn't get that from her, but I can see now that you say it, I can see where people get that from. I've just been so blinded by the fact that she's willing to get in there and mix things up. And she's been saying it since the very beginning that maybe I'm getting blinded by, like, see, I'm falling under the Shane spell. This is why I'm a bad Survivor player. I so easily fall under the
Shane. She's tricking other people too. But I think that she's only really been able to go out there and mix it up with, you know, when she's either on the bottom. So when she was on the bottom in the champions, she was willing to do whatever.
Mm.
She didn't have loyalty to the people who were in control. But once she got in with Matt's group, she really just expected people to lie down in front of them.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't interested in making moves while she was inside that group. I also just wanted to say that I loved her revenge of moving the logs on the fire.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about. I was going to ask, like, what was she going for there?
Was that the you don't F with Shane Gould moment?
Oh, my God, the best.
I think it was.
Whichever producer got Shane Gould, if in fact she, you know, didn't just say that off the bat and a producer got her to say that, find that producer and give them a raise, because to me that is the soundbite of the season.
And her little chuckle after, it's just so adorable. Yeah.
Best.
But I feel like, we're getting a lot of hero music when Shane Gould is doing her freestyle, and it isn't, I mean, she's a great swimmer. But I feel like me telling like an Olympic medalist that she's a great swimmer is very patronizing, and I wish I hadn't just said that. But like,
good on you.
She's good for you, but she's amazing. I don't think that she's got the most game.
Yeah, I think that I just love that she's willing to get in and mix it up. Like, like it seems to have worn off on people. Like, you know, she was like pottering around finding that idol underneath the bucket of ice back in that episode.
Yeah.
And that's what Brian did at the reward. Like, it's just like completely open. Everyone did it. I thought that was really cool. What did you think of that whole reward dynamic? Because, you know, let's talk about your experience. So you went on the champagne reward after the auction?
After the auction.
And you famously, you know, formed this alliance with Michelle and Luke, which was called the Champagne Alliance. You upend the game. Do you actually credit that experience at the reward, or was that just a convenient plot device for the audience? Do you actually think that without that moment, it wouldn't have happened?
I think that moment was crucial. Yeah, I do. I don't know what would have happened if we hadn't gone out there, but we all put in a lot of work, I think, on that reward, and we had the advantage. We had all night. Like, we were getting up and down at night, eating Tim Tams and talking the entire night, putting that plan in place. And I think rewards are really crucial time for solidifying a plan and getting people excited about it and making something, because you do, I think, when you're out there, have a bit of a narrative in your head about how that story is going to be told.
Yeah.
And it helps even in your, like, to solidify, like, we were going, like, hashtag Champagne Alliance. Like, you know, I think it does help to solidify the story in your mind.
Yes.
And to give you something to clutch onto that is, feels real, and helps give you momentum to carry the plan through.
It's kind of like understanding the meta game that happens when the show is being watched.
Yeah,
it's kind of like what Benji and Sean were saying about the poop idol being like, that'll be a gif kind of thing.
Yeah, that'll be a gif. Yeah, we used to do that too. We used to be like, that'll be your hero shot, like, especially when someone had done something stupid. And also, we looked really blatantly for idol clues at that reward.
Right.
We all, like, looked at the same time, because at a certain, like, when you tried to be a bit sneaky and look under your pillow and then you're like, oh, stuff it. You know, everyone's looking. I'd rather we looked blatantly so I know where it is.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people do that.
I think that what I really liked about that was something that Sian did, is that, like, obviously Sian was on the bottom and it would have taken her a lot of self-control to not look for an idol clue in that moment. But when Brian starts doing it, she's like, no, you know, he should be able to look. And, like, she was just doing everything she could to kind of curry his favor. And it must have worked in the end. So I thought that was pretty cool. I really like how he kind of left the idol behind. Left his water bottle behind to go and get the idol. I thought that was really cool.
That was smooth. It could have been a little bit harder to get, though, that idol.
Yeah.
Like, he could have also just, like, sat there and done up his shoelace or something while everyone was a chicken. But still, it was quite clever.
So, Tess, this season we have been charting the Danzy, and Stephen LeCountre on, I think I finally said his name right. Please tell me I've said it right. has been doing a great job kind of, like, gathering all that information for us. So we need a 3-2-1 for you and from me to see who is going to be the best player of the season, because Matt was far and away blitzing this, and there's now no resistance to him, and we can now kind of, like, hopefully some other people will take the reins. So yeah, it's actually a battle between Matt and Benji. So what do we got? Who are you going for your 1 point?
This is so hard because I'm a really biased person and I want to help my favorites.
But this is your whatever you want to do, it's your points.
No, fairness matters. Okay. I just did this Myers-Briggs thing today, and apparently I'm basically a robot in terms of my personality. So that's why I'm like, nah, that's my favorite. So I'm going to give my 3 points to Brian, because he clearly played the best week.
Yes.
And he has clearly advanced his game the most, in almost in tandem with Monica, but he then also got an idol, won immunity, and seems to have been the sort of focal point for people coming to him with strategy and moves. So I'm giving Brian my 3 points.
I am going to agree with that, because I think that he was just all over the map. He was all over both episodes. That couldn't have happened. None of those things could have happened without him. And he came off the big winner. He won the immunity when he needed to. He, you know, got rid of two huge threats and is still kind of like now in this position. Now, he very easily could go home next week. Like, I think that there is a chance he could go home. With Shane and Steve and Sean kind of like making sure that, like, you know, they don't retain in that swing position. But I think that he did a lot of good stuff and he got the idol. So yeah, 3 points to me. And you know,
welcome to the game.
Yes, welcome. I think this may be his very first points. I'm not sure, but he hasn't been polling very well. But one of the things that's interesting is that Evan from my season a couple of weeks ago came on the podcast, Tessa, and I'm not sure if you heard that episode, but he put out a plan as to why Brian is going to win the game. And
I'm sure I listened to that, but I can't remember his plan. I probably was like, that's rubbish, and fast-forwarded through it.
Yeah. See, I completely, I still disagree with his thought process and his logic of how he got there. But it does seem like there is a chance now that we are building towards potentially a Brian kind of strong finish. I just don't think the edit's been there to support him as the winner.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say he's the winner.
He's in the running just because edit-wise there is not a lot of competition.
Yeah.
And I think, like, we did get, like, his totally, like, gratuitous bowling ball ocean walking scenes, which maybe at a stretch that was trying to bring in a little bit of the winner moment, but it's hard to make an argument for that.
Yeah. I think that he is he's here for in terms of for as viewers, a good time, not a long time. So I don't see him winning still. So I stand by that, Evan. And I was flamed on Twitter this week when everyone was like, see, Evan was right. He's going to win. Who do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that if Brian is our winner, that has been a big disservice in terms of progressing the game of Survivor. Because why would anyone then go out to play Australian Survivor and make any move or even, like, talk in a confessional until, you know, 80% of the way through the game?
I think that we are far and away getting the Sean winner edit from now on. I've said that from that episode, from the merge onwards. I've had a really good feeling. Actually, probably before that. I have a really good feeling about her. Even after Matt went home and she misplayed the idol, I still thought that we've got the Sean thing.
That was the little dip before the rise.
Yes, exactly. What do you think for 2 points?
I think it's only fair to give my 2 points to Monica because I think that she's been trusted by all sides. She's always in the numbers. I have no idea what she's thinking and it's driving me nuts. But in terms of, you know, big winners this week, even more than Brian, although she didn't have as much agency, I think, as Brian did, but she's less of a threat and she got all the same gains.
Yep.
So, except for jury bonus, but I'm still giving Monica 2 points.
I agree. Again, welcome to the game, Monica, because these are her first points. But I even like that they showed a little scene between her and Steve. Like, obviously, there's a relationship there that we have never seen before. So I think, I agree with you. Who is your 1 point?
Benji. I'm going to give an honorary out-the-door point to Benji for creativity and because I really enjoyed his game. And I think that there were large portions of the season that would have been really dull without him.
Tessa, this is going to be very dull, but I am also doing the same thing. I agree. Obviously he went home, so it has to be a memorial point. But, what he did, a couple of things he did this episode were just outstanding.
Clever and cool. Yeah.
Tess, I have some questions from the listeners, if you would indulge us before we wrap this up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Awesome. So I've been collecting questions on Twitter and on the Patreon Facebook group. So if you are not a patron and you still want to be able to get your questions in, check it out on Twitter. I put a post up every before I record. So get your thoughts into the show. So let's start with Ivan. Ivan said, what's Brian and Monica's best next move?
So I think they should stick with the contenders girls. Are we at 7?
We are at 7.
Perfect. That gives them 4. Take down Sean, Shane and Steve and run to the final 4 with the girls.
So you think they need to flip back again?
Yeah, I do. And I think they easily can.
Yes.
I think that, I mean, it's hard to know what the girls' relationship was with Benji because we saw, like, Fenella's vote confessional was 1 week it was, like, bye, Benji, sick of you or something like that.
Mm.
And the next week it was, like, sorry, Benji, I really didn't want to vote for you. So it's hard for me to understand what their relationship was with him. But I think that they've clearly been working on Brian and Brian's been working on them and I don't think they're going to be particularly cut by this. I think that for them sticking together is really important and Brian and Monica can offer them that. So I don't see why they wouldn't go with it. And I think for all four of them, it's probably a better move than trying to stick with any of the three champions.
Yeah, I think that
probably,
is.
Yeah, and they, I mean, those three champions all have pretty good jury speeches.
I think that we now have to look, you know, they have to be considering who can I win against. I actually think that Brian and Monica can't win against, I think they're at the bottom of the totem pole. I genuinely think that if we were to rank it in order of who could win, we've got Sean, Shane, and Shawnee probably at the top, followed closely by followed closely by Fenella, maybe Steve, and then I actually think that Brian and Monica are the ones who are drawing dead.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I feel like their chances are better with the contenders for girls because for whatever benefit they're going to get from being champions and having lived with most of the jury for the start of the game, you know, they might as well stick with the girls. And it gives them a pretty solid chance of if they wanted to go final two together. Neither of the girls have looked like winning immunity.
Nick Fishman asks, out of all the fire sabotages, where does Shane's rank?
I think it was the most devious because it was like a very like clear thought out fire sabotage.
I was definitely getting tire vibes when she did it. But I just want the best bit about the whole thing is that she spilled the beans at tribal council. It was like I did this thing and I want people to know that I did this thing. So I'm just going to say
nobody acknowledged this in the morning, but I clearly sabotaged the fire. Just get the recognition she was wanting for that.
So good. Ma Barbara says, Tessa, can you sort some of the remaining survivors into Hogwarts houses?
Oh, fun. This is one of my favourite pastimes.
Yes.
All right, so Sian is a Ravenclaw.
Good
call. Monica's a Hufflepuff. Steve? I'm going to say that he's a muggle. the girls,
Muggle Steve.
Who else have we got? We've got Brian seems a little Gryffindor, Slytherin. He'll be Gryffindor, maybe Slytherin.
Mm-hmm.
Slytherin, yeah. And then we've got Fenella. Nah, she's a Hufflepuff. She's such a fun Hufflepuff. She's the good kind of Hufflepuff.
Yep.
I think Shawnee could completely be a Slytherin. I really have, like, I did this with Libby as well from the last season where I was just like, oh, I feel like she could be really, like, cutthroat and, like, you know, really sneaky, but she hadn't done it. Anyway, she could still be Shawnee.
Awesome.
Who'd I miss? Did I miss anyone?
Shane.
Shane, Hufflepuff.
You reckon?
Yeah.
She was giving me mad Slytherin vibes.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you could make an argument for Gryffindor.
You definitely could make an argument for Gryffindor, our Australia's golden girl.
She's too cheeky for Slytherin.
Yeah, but it's inside her. Don't F with Shane Gould.
Okay. Honorary Slytherin. Okay, it's a great thing to be a Slytherin. I wish I was.
Oh, look, it is great. I wear it with pride. Well, you're a Ravenclaw?
A Ravenclaw, yeah.
My wife. My wife is as well. So, you know, they breed him good in Ravenclaw.
Oh.
Katie Kleber says, did you ever have a Waterwell moment where you accidentally told a bad lie? Now, we don't need to get my answer. I'm pretty sure we all know what that one is. But what about you, Tess?
Did I tell a bad lie? Probably. I said just bad things. Like the most obvious bad thing I said was when I told Michelle she was on the bottom. That was so atrocious.
That was the best.
It was a fireside bad moment.
The best.
And it was similar to Benji's as well, where it kind of came out of my mouth and then I was like, oh.
You could see it on your face. You were just like, I know what I've done.
Yeah. It was one of those, I told you I'm kind of a robot. And she was asking me, like, why isn't anyone talking to me? And I was like, well, you want the truth? Yeah, it was really bad. But I don't know. It's hard to remember telling a really bad lie. I'm sure I did, but I can't remember.
Billy Stevens, the great Billy Stevens, who on Twitter is, I believe, will be on the next season of Survivor. You watch. You go, Billy. Cool. He says, since you've played with Annalise before, I want to ask, what are the biggest attributes of both the Wilson's games, Benji and Annalise, that are completely similar or completely different? So this is an interesting question.
Oh, that is an interesting question. So I think they both had a very good understanding of the Secret Alliance. I think Annalise was somebody who definitely had her finger in a lot of pots. And she did the same thing where she sort of had people looking out for her who were not in her alliance. So they weren't necessarily voting together, but they were trying to shift the vote off of her. And I think Benji's done that, obviously, most notably with Sian. Yeah, I'd say that's the notable similarity. And then in terms of differences, I mean, Benji's just a very different personality to Annalise. Annalise really, like, embraces her, like, I'm a bit quirky and, like, falling over things sometimes. I don't know if she'll enjoy me saying that, but that's, like, I think she does that, like, a really adorable way, and that's, like, her thing. And whereas Benji was very, like, confident, one of the guys, he says bro a lot. Like, if Annalise said bro, it would definitely be in an ironic way. So that's a difference.
How you just came back from a holiday in Greece with her. How was her, her reaction been to the season and seeing it all play out?
We actually watched a couple of episodes together. In fact, I'm wearing my Wilson jumper right now that she bought to make sure that I was on board with Team Wilson. She obviously didn't buy me enough. Hopefully I said enough nice things. I gave a point.
You have.
Yeah, it was so cool just to, like, hang out and spend time together, actually, on another tropical island, which was fun. We played a lot of Spish, and we're both definitely, like, my other friends from home were on this island, on this holiday in Greece, and they watched us in horror while we were playing spit because we were, like, actually practically spitting.
What the hell is spit?
Oh, you don't know what I'm talking about. It's a card game. It's an intense card game.
Okay. And what do you do?
Okay. One day I will come to Adelaide and I will teach you how to play spit.
Please do. I am very.
I'm so trapped.
So do you actually have to spit on people?
No, gosh.
That's kind of what I'm imagining with this game.
I'm really sorry that you went through so much of my rambling about spit, thinking we were spitting at each other.
Well,
you reacted so calmly.
Yeah, I was just like, hold on, let's just rack my brain, see if I know what this is. Well, I guess it's a nice segue into our last question about, you know, bodily fluids. Christopher Bozzilieri asks, who is more ridiculous, Brian for peeing mid-challenge or Jericho for peeing mid-podcast when he was talking to me last year?
I actually heard that and I had to stop because I was laughing so hard.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
Funny. So true fact, before every challenge, Ziggy and I used to have to pee at least once. So we'd have to, like, as we were all lining up, like, turn around and squat in the bushes. So I get where Brian's coming from. It's the performance. It makes you nervous, a nervous bladder. So definitely Jericho's grosser.
Well, I would like to throw a third one in the mix. And I don't know if I've ever told this story in the podcast before because it's freaking gross. But just before the water slide challenge where we got letters from home, which was the episode I went home, I was in a team with Sam Webb and we were climbing to the top of the big platform before the challenge started. And he just crawled to the side of the ladder about 4 meters in the air, pulled his pants down, and did the biggest poo I have ever seen. It was the most horrifying moment. I'm apologies to anyone who's listening, who's eating, but it was, I would say, without a word of a lie, it was 60 centimeters long. It curled into the shape of a J and it floated in the middle of the challenge that we couldn't start the challenge because it was just sitting there in front of everyone. And it was the most horrific thing I have ever seen. And I think more people need to know about this story.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and the
how
show.
How long have you been hanging on to this Sam story?
I blocked it from my mind, and then when I saw Brian up on the platform, it just all came flooding back. You ask anyone from season one who was in the final 11 onwards. You ask anyone who was there from the crew. They were in their microphones. They were in their walkie talkies, going, "We just have to wait for the poo to go by."
They're lucky they didn't have some poor intern to send them faster. Someone just go out and collect the poo, please.
Yeah. So we started this podcast talking about poop idols and we've ended it with poop. So I think that is a good place to stop. Tessa, what is the hashtag for this episode that people can use through Twitter to let us know that they made it all the way to the end and heard the awful story that I decided to drop on everyone?
I want to say Sam poop, web poop.
Well, here are some
not about poop. It's the real fail.
Well, here are the suggestions I had. I had Muggle Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Bechamel test. Or poop idol.
That really means Bechamel is not getting cut out of this podcast, doesn't it? what was Never. The last one? Poop idol. Poop no, idol. I like Muggle Steve.
Okay, awesome. Let's do it. Muggle Steve, everyone. Hashtag Muggle
poop
Steve.
Idol. Poop idol's probably already trending.
True.
Muggle Steve. Nice.
Tessa, where can people find you on social media?
I'm a bit hopeless, as you've learned. Sorry, Nick. but... probably Instagram is best. I am at TVOHA1, which is why I'm so hard to find.
I was going to say, I think if we had Rob Sestanino on this, he would chastise you terribly for that awfully hard name to find.
I know. And I don't tweet, which I loiter on Twitter. So I do see tweets.
So
I just have never tweeted.
So, Tessa, I went to tag you in the post that I was putting up about, you being on the podcast, and I couldn't remember if you had Twitter or not. I'm pretty sure you didn't. So I searched at Tessa O'Halloran, and I came up with someone, and I went to go tag them in it, and I had to delete the tweet because I realized it's some, 15-year-old girl from Galway Island.
Oh, no.
It should have been a giveaway when I realized that her first tweet was, "Oh, my God, I love being young." And I just couldn't imagine you ever saying something so puerile. So apologies to @Tessa_O'Halloran. But
wouldn't it be funny if that was me and I was just, laughing along at this, I didn't say that.
Yeah. I feel like we need to collectively bully @Tessa_O'Halloran and off of Twitter so that you can then come on and then take that name.
So that I don't have to be TVOHA1.
So is that what you are on Twitter as well?
I don't know. Sorry, I only loiter. I actually don't know.
Okay, well, I've gotten a few people to join Twitter through this podcast, the great Des being the most notable example. So I think that we should get you on Twitter because there's...
If I decide to tweet, Nick, I'll tweet you and then you'll know what my handle is.
And I'll tweet it out for everyone to join. So awesome.
Okay.
Tessa.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
No, thank you. This has been, I could chat Survivor with you for hours because it's very rare you find someone who thinks about it the same way, as I've said before. I just absolutely love hearing your take. It's just, it's spot on. It's clear, it's concise. I absolutely loved it. So I'm sure the fans did as well. So let us know your thoughts, everyone. But Tessa, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me this early in the morning. Again, kudos to you, early riser, dad to be.
Well, if anyone has been hearing my alarm for my phone go off in the background.
I did. Sorry to Nick's school that he's running late.
That's okay. I'm on my way now. Next week, Tessa, I'm announcing it for the first time right here, guys. You're hearing it first. Next week on the podcast will be the great Luke Tokey.
Stop it.
No, you stop it.
What a champ.
I'm slowly trying to work through all my trauma of you guys all getting voted out in 1 week. I had Sarah, I had you on, and now it's Luke. And I think that after that, I'll finally be able to put my demons to rest.
Yeah, I'm sure that's how psychotherapy works.
All right, well, Tessa, thank you so much, and we will catch up soon. Everyone, let us know what you thought, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Okay.